Welcome to Birth on Film, a podcast discussing and analysing depictions of pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum in popular culture. We are your hosts, Emma, a midwife,
and James, her mid-husband, coming to you from Ngunnawal country in the Australian Capital Territory.
This is episode one, and we are discussing the 1989 film Look Who's Talking.
It stars Kirstie Alley as Molly and John Travolta as James, and Bruce Willis providing the voice for Mikey.
So the synopsis, I guess, of this movie is after a single career-minded woman is left on her own to give birth to the child of a married man, she finds a near romantic chance in a cab driver. Meanwhile, the point of view of the baby is narrated through voiceover.
So we picked this movie for our first one because you had a particular relationship to it. Tell me about that.
I did want this as our first movie to cover off because this is my earliest memory of birth on film. Like, if I think about the first time I saw even like pregnancy depicted in a movie, this is it. Like, I have really strong memories. So we must have had it on VHS because we watched it a lot, and we used to call it the Talking Baby Movie. And we'd watch it a lot. For a long time, I think it was the only movie I'd really seen with a pregnant person in it, and then where birth happened. And so I think it probably planted a seed for me that, like, oh, this is birth.
Did it give you a opinion about birth based on the version of birth that this movie shows?
No, I think it probably raised some questions. I don't think those were answered.
So you didn't go away from this movie. This is not a particularly bad birth scene or anything, but like bad from what I know as an adult. But you didn't go away from this movie going, oh, birth is bad, or birth is great, or having a child sucks, or having a child is great.
No, I mean, in my naivety, it was just all about the talking baby and birth. Just
so it was babies are cute.
Yeah.
And Bruce Willis has a cute voice for babies.
Yeah. Yeah. He really sold it.
Yeah, so this movie did really well. It only cost $7.5 million to make. And, like, the total box office figures are almost $297 million.
Yeah, and when you read about it, it was a surprising success. Like, number one in the box office for weeks.
Yeah.
For a movie, I think, that was written off by critic as a nothing movie. It was not critically acclaimed.
It had a good gimmick. It sold because of the gimmick.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, people liked it. The movie is directed by Amy Heckerling.
She also wrote it. And it has not great Rotten Tomatoes ratings. It's got a 55% critic review and then a 47% audience score. So that's not great.
It's interesting when you compare it to like how much money it made, right?
Yeah.
Like the criticism of it doesn't actually match up. What's important here is like when you see a movie that's made that much money, it also tells you that a lot of people have seen this movie. Whether or not they liked it, it's had big viewership.
Yeah, it's definitely in the psyche of people.
Yes.
If you ask people, do you know about that movie that had a talking baby in it, they'd know which one you're talking about.
Yes, that birth scene potentially has a big impact, which I think is quite interesting. Let's start at the beginning of the movie with the setup.
So the movie opens. First image you see, aside from the production logos or whatnot, is a happy egg floating down what looks like the fallopian tube, but well, visually, it looks like streaming ribbons,
sort of. It's very blue.
Yeah, it's very blue.
And then we cut to Kirstie Alley, or her character's name is Molly, doing some accounting with a slightly older man. Forget what his character name is.
Oh, my goodness. I've forgotten it as well. I've called him Deadbeat in my notes. I haven't written his name down anywhere.
In my mind, he's Baby Daddy.
Yeah. Let's call him Baby Daddy. That's fine.
Yeah, Baby Daddy.
And he's bothering her while she's trying to work.
Yes. But we quickly establish he's a married man who is in a relationship with his accountant.
Yeah. And all of this is consensual. She's up for it. She thinks that he's great. I don't know why, but she does.
He's going to leave his wife. And then we cut to the sperm race.
Yeah. So we have the football squad of sperm racing down the canal, all like jibber jabbering at each other and stuff.
Looking for the egg.
Yeah, looking for the egg. I feel like they were chatting to each other as they were swimming about where they are. Like they were like, where are we? Where's the egg? Like they were trying to figure it out, as evidenced by the one who got stuck on the wall.
And we'll note that the egg doesn't talk.
Yeah, they eventually find the egg and start mashing on the edge of it, on the outside of it, which is a fairly accurate depiction of what I understand insemination to be.
Yeah. Like,
is that the right word there?
The moment of conception.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to say it.
And as that happens, there's lightning and
technicolor,
and it's like this magic, big magical moment.
And then the egg starts dividing, which is cool, but it's like dividing with blue smoke and lightning clouds. Yes.
And then we cut straight to Molly throwing up. And we cut back internal, and there's like a teeny tiny baby in her uterus with his eyes open and quite well formed for what we assume is very early gestation. At this stage, she doesn't know that she's pregnant.
Yeah,
she thinks she's got the stomach flu.
Yeah.
We're thinking maybe she's like 6 to 8 weeks pregnant, maybe.
Yeah. But baby's got fingers developing, has eyeballs open, has a head, has a torso.
Talking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's talking. Doesn't ever stop talking.
No. And then cravings start developing. She has comments by her family that she's been eating more.
Yeah, you never like my cooking. And she's finishing off the second plate of her mum's cooking, yes, or something like that.
And so obviously she starts to get suspicious. And so she does a pregnancy test finally. We don't find out how far along she is.
No, they're very loose with the time frame.
So, and it's a super old school pregnancy test. So yeah.
I was going to ask if, now, I've never talked about it before the podcast, but so she's got like a pipette and she's got like a glass tube. And she's dropping something into something else. I don't know what any of that is.
So nowadays,
most people are very familiar
that you go and buy like a stick from the supermarket and either pee on it or you can like pee into a cup and then dip it in. And if it detects beta-HCG, you get two lines or however else the test wants to tell you that you're pregnant. Some of them are digital now and literally show you the word pregnant or not pregnant. In the old days, you caught your urine.
Yeah.
In a jar, or like in her case, she had like a small glass tube that I assume came with the test. And then you drop in what's essentially in the test now, but it goes one color if it detects beta HCG in the urine and goes a different color if it doesn't. So in her case, she drops it in and I think it goes pink, which her reaction tells you that she's pregnant, but there seems to be a bit of implied, like, and this is, like, you should know that this is a pregnancy, a positive pregnancy test.
There was quite a bit of the audience knows what's going on here.
Then she confirms her pregnancy with her GP. Nothing about having an ultrasound or anything like that. He dates the pregnancy based on a palpation. So he, like, feels her uterus and I guess where it's sitting in her abdomen, he bases that on far along she's.
He said it's confirmed or something like that to begin with.
Yes.
That was from assuming that they did a blood test of some kind.
Yes.
Like, and then he followed up with the physical examinations.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we go through a lot of pregnancy tropes.
So there's like a few montages. There's a lot of montages in this movie. It's quite a montage heavy movie. And in this one we're doing, pregnancy tropes. And scenes with the deadbeat being like, no, I swear I'll leave her. And then being uninterested in what's actually going on. Just being very dismissive of the whole you're having a baby thing.
Yes. I guess the pregnancy tropes, I'm thinking of like so we've had morning sickness, we've had cravings. We then get crazy pregnancy dreams. Lots of talk about weight gain. At one point she describes herself. She says, I look like a big fat pilgrim. She's like a perfectly healthy looking
pregnant. Yeah, she doesn't even look like she's pregnant, really.
Woman, yes.
Did you say she said she looks like a big fat pilgrim? Yes. I don't know what that means.
No, neither. But like they really drive that pregnancy trope home. Like it comes up quite a few times.
So they also, in I think that same scene, or maybe it was an earlier scene, discuss abortion. She says something about I'm pregnant.
Oh, my biological clock is ticking.
And then he says, I would never even suggest an abortion or something like that.
Yes.
But he says the word abortion, which is like, it's not even like a euphemism, we'll take care of it.
Or, and meanwhile, she tells all of her family and friends that she's been artificially inseminated because obviously she doesn't want to admit to anybody that she's had she's not having an affair. Yeah,
she's just protecting him.
Yes.
Which is just,
And I will note that her mother, when she tells her mother that she's been artificially inseminated, her mother says, this is what a girl does if she's ugly. Instead of being like a celebration of science and of that, women can do it on their own. And I guess actually like why I wrote this point down, I think it really sets up a lot about the idea of a woman having a baby on her own at this point and perhaps still is just abhorrent to some people.
Yeah. We're further along. She's about 7 months pregnant. She starts looking quite round in the belly, only in the belly. And they start really going hard at the cravings thing.
Yes.
They start really going more hard at the
stuff,
scale.
More weight gain stuff. Oh, and we see her and her work colleague/friend trying to put together the nursery.
Yes. Yeah, great scene of them. Well, I think that might be throughout the montage-y parts where they're trying to buy and build stuff. And, yeah, they end up just smashing a crib, I think, because yes. They get fed up with assembly. Just after the scene where they're talking about you shouldn't gain too much weight, she says, I'm afraid of giving birth. And then she says something about how she's scared of pain. I was never good at pain.
Is that where we hear our first mention of Lamaze?
Yes, actually, I was about to say, why did I write down the word llamas? But it's not llamas, it's Lamaze.
So we hear this word a lot in the movie, and for me at least, it's a word I knew from a really young age because of how frequently it's used
cinema. Lamaze referring to a breathing technique thing.
So I had to really look it up. So yes, I thought it was a breathing technique, but Lamaze is a childbirth education program, also commonly known as psychoprophylaxis, developed in the Soviet Union during the Cold War when they were concerned that they didn't have enough pain relief to go around for all the women having babies, and women had become quite reliant on pain relief in labor. So this method of breathing was developed to support women through drug-free labor and birth. It was then picked up by a French obstetrician named Dr. Lamaze, who developed it further. And then by the 1960s, there was Lamaze International. And that's the organization that continues to run this childbirth education to this day. It's childbirth education promoting natural, a better word for it, vaginal birth without intervention and pain relief. I guess most commonly known for the breathing technique that gets portrayed. It's a fairly heavily criticized technique. So we hear it for the first time in pregnancy, and it's not the last time we hear about it.
So then we're now at roughly, let's call it 9 months. We don't know, but so let's call it 9 months.
She's full term.
Yeah, that's interesting. She goes into labor, and we just assume that it's full term and that everything's fine.
Yes.
It's not even commented on.
Yeah. So here is the labor and the birth. So it starts with her in a shop with her work colleague / friend, looking at dresses, again, commenting how big she is.
Yeah, and getting her friend to try on dresses instead of her so she can wear them after she's had a baby. Not pregnant. Yes. Yeah.
And baby daddy is in the same shop canoodling with the shopkeeper.
No, with the interior decorator.
Yes,
there's been a scene there was a scene early in the montages where she goes to visit the baby daddy and talk about things, and there's this other woman there.
So, fight happens.
Yeah, shouting and etc.
Friend starts to beat up baby daddy, and Molly flees the scene on foot. We're in New York City. So she's out on a busy street and she clutches her belly and says, help, please, I'm in labor, while she tries to flag down a cab.
So she flags down a cab, and it's John Travolta in the cabbie seat,
who we later learn is named James.
Yeah. Well, we also get a scene, internal scenes cutting in here, all the way through to birth.
Oh, that's right, yes.
So she goes, oh, I'm in labor. And then we get to an internal scene of baby Bruce Willis getting squished by, fluffy clouds that are supposed to be the uterus. Like, as you described uteruses to me, it's this big, smooth muscle that is like a sphere.
Yes.
He gets squashed by, like, four pillows from different directions. Yes, it's probably as good as you could do at the time with the technology.
But he's very much floating around in there. Like,
he's got so much space. Kick his legs, no problem.
Yes. Like, the uterus around this baby is disproportionately large.
Yeah.
But, you know, semantics.
Yeah, so he gets squished, and then she flags down a cab. John Travolta stops. She gets in the cab with John Travolta and then tells him the hospital she's going to.
Yeah, and then makes a slight labor pain, like,
she goes, and clutches her belly.
Cue speeding to the hospital.
Yeah.
Mass panic.
Yeah, just ridiculous action scene of getting woman to hospital.
Yes.
In a taxi cab in New York, whilst turning around and talking to her at length about first Lamaze and then later on,
tells her to bear down at one point, but she's like 2 seconds into labor.
Yeah.
We're not pushing yet, but he's telling her bear down. And then her waters break.
Yeah. So she's in the taxi, and then she says, oops, my waters broke. And he turns around and goes, oh, no.
Cue more drama, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, more panic.
So I was going to ask about her going into labor and then her waters breaking. So women up to being in labour, get contractions occasionally, Braxton Hicks contractions and yeah, other like practice ones. Yeah,
uterus tends to practice. They're referred to as Braxton Hicks contractions.
Yeah. So would a woman know, oh, I'm in labour now, before her waters is broken? Or would she just know, oh, that was a big contraction?
We make a really big leap between, like, there's no sort of build up to it. She sort of goes from going about her day, having this fight with baby daddy, to walking along the street and essentially declaring she's in labour, has to get to the hospital urgently because contracting. But in reality, it's not that fast at all, and not that you wouldn't know straight away, like, because you get Braxton Hicks or like practice contractions a lot towards the end of pregnancy, and they can be pretty intense. But like, as a midwife, I'm not telling anyone to go to the hospital until they're getting regular painful contractions. And at this point, like, she's literally 2 seconds into labor and she's in a cab and it's all happening.
It's all hectic.
Maybe the waters breaking is more of a sign, but you can also break your waters and not be in labor.
I was going to say, yeah, women, waters get broken well before labor.
Yeah. So, times. Like, typically happens in labor.
Yeah.
Typically right towards the end of labor, unless somebody's broken those waters on purpose.
Yeah.
But just because the waters break doesn't mean, oh, here we go. But here we go, because she gets to the hospital.
Yeah, and I think that it's probably fair to characterize from the moment when she says, oh, I'm in labor, to when the baby is born, when Mikey gets born. The movie portrays that as one long contraction.
Yeah, it's like she doesn't seem to get a break.
Yeah.
Although at times she seems really fine as well.
Yeah.
But it does seem like she just becomes labor.
So she's rushed into hospital from the cab to the, like, check-in desk.
Yes.
And there's this weird double conversation. The nurse, administrator, whatever, behind the desk is telling Kirstie Alam, we can't admit you without your medical card. It's impossible to admit you without your medical card.
And Joe Travolta. And there's still a lot of panic because she's in labor.
Yeah.
And then a doctor says, to the effect, like, oh, just go to the labor ward, or...
And they just wheel her away.
Yeah.
While John Travolta's arguing with somebody about where he's parked.
Yes.
These both conversations happening over each other.
Like, poorly. Chaotic and panic-stricken.
Yeah.
And then we cut to her...
A little bit later.
We assume a little bit later. She's in a hospital gown, in hospital socks. Knee-length hospital socks.
Forgot about those.
On her back, in a bed, with this... mystery old woman sitting next to her.
Reading a magazine.
Yeah, and we later realise she's I'm going to call her the obstetric nurse. Sure. I don't want to call her a midwife.
Also, in the shot, we pan across the line drawn on paper.
Oh, yeah, so we see that, yeah, baby's heart rate is being monitored on a machine called a CTG. So it measures baby's heart rate, and it measures, to a degree, the intensity of contractions.
Yeah.
So she's got one of those going. And I did a double take on it when it first showed on screen, because either it's really old school or it's just a brand I'm not used to, but the where it's printing the contractions and the heart rate are reversed.
Yeah.
And it looked terrible, but when I got my head around it, paused the movie and got my head around it, it was actually a fairly decent trace.
Yeah, a good simulation of a real trace.
Yes, a bit straight. It normally would have a reason for putting on a CTG.
Yeah, of course.
And but this is a healthy woman, well, as far as we know, healthy baby, who's spontaneously gone into labor.
Yeah, yeah, normal.
Normal.
Normal healthy.
And now she's laying flat on her back in a hospital bed with a monitor on.
Yeah, so we know she's seen a doctor.
Yes.
Presumably an obstetrician or a OBGYN, whatever you call them in America.
Well, we sort of later make the assumption, you and I, that she's been seeing a GP obstetrician.
Because she knows nothing.
Yes.
She's really naive about everything.
So, yeah, she's laying there, and then James, the cab driver, comes
back. Yeah, he comes back bursting in a gown now.
So this guy does not know her.
Yeah, they've met literally in the cab ride over.
Yes.
And he's taken the role of the father, and everybody's just okay with this.
And she's complaining how awful labor is and that she needs pain relief. And he says, no, you don't. You don't want any of that terrible stuff. But then the doctor does come in and...
No, I'm not sure, because he does say that. I'm not sure how it changes his mind, but then he goes into the corridor and just grabs a doctor and brings him in.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he does go and he gets the doctor, and the doctor comes in. And the doctor says, have you been practicing your Lamaze?
Mm.
And she says, no, I quit, like, my Lamaze class. So he then says, okay, I can give you some Demerol.
Yeah, which I don't know what that is.
So I had to look it up because Demerol is not familiar to me. And I know that, like, pain relief options have changed pretty dramatically over the years, but Demerol is just the brand name for pethidine, which was extremely common for pain relief in labor in the 80s and 90s.
It's like morphine today.
Yeah.
He draws it up into a syringe, like a syringe with a needle on it.
Yes, a sharp needle.
And then goes to her cannula, which is running something.
Yeah, so she's got
fluids, I presume.
No, it's just in her hand. She's got a cannula, which is like it's put in with a needle, but when what's left behind is just a plastic tube for. Usually, you'd have it to have a drip.
Yeah,
but she's just got one in her hand, and he uses the needle.
He just kind of holds it nearby.
Inject her pethidine into her cannula. Yeah,
and then we get an internal shot because they're still getting those of Mikey the baby. Having psychedelic trippy effects.
Tripping?
In the womb, in the uterus.
Yes. Having not had pethidine, I don't know for sure, but I don't think it is like a hallucinogenic.
Yeah.
Mikey is having a grand old time, and Molly has a lot of relief flush over her.
Yeah.
Instantly.
As the doctor walked in, I forgot to mention, he says to the obstetric nurse or whatever she is, where are we at? And she goes, water broke 30 minutes ago, 5 centimeters dilated.
Yes. And then we cut to a different room. So she's been moved to, one would assume then, like, more of a birth room.
Mm.
Now more so on her back, and she's in lithotomy.
Yeah. What's lithotomy?
Lithotomy is where you put your knees go up into stirrup. You're flat on your back, and then these plates come out from the bottom of the bed.
Yeah.
And hold your knees up.
Up and to the sides.
So essentially presenting your vagina,
yeah,
to whoever's at the end of the bed,
just whoever wants to hang around, yeah.
And in her case, the people in the room at this point at the business end is the doctor,
yeah.
We see on the side an obstetric nurse,
mm,
and then the cab driver who she's known for 30 minutes.
Is the cab driver all the way? Is James all the way down the end? Is he looking at this woman who he doesn't know? Is he in the private business?
He looks at the yes.
What is he doing?
I know. It's the strangest thing. So we cut between very end stages of labor.
Yeah.
To then internally we see
Mikey is floating around and he goes, ooh, looks like there's some light down there, and then kind of swims towards the canal. Head first.
Head first, so they got that right.
Yeah, clearly not engaged with anything.
No. And then the next shot is him in the doctor's hands, being held up, crying.
Yeah.
His little lungs out.
Yeah, baby crying, and Bruce Willis going, who's that? Who are you? It's cold. Put me back in. Which is pretty funny. I'm sure that is exactly what you think when you're a baby.
Yes. Yeah. So they don't talk about there's no mention of a placenta.
Nope.
And we certainly don't see the birth of a placenta.
Nope.
But we do see that baby has an umbilical cord, and it looks actually pretty realistic. And then we see James, the cab driver.
James does. They make a big deal of showing that it's James who's cutting the cord. Again, why that dude? Yes. Why?
And that actually is quite a realistic. Like, it doesn't look completely fake.
Mm.
And then Mikey is whisked away and suctioned and swaddled up nice and tight before finally being presented to Molly.
Yeah. And Mikey is a small baby. Maybe, I think you looked it up, that he was...
Yeah, so the actor, if you will, who played brand new Mikey was a newborn baby at the time when they filmed it.
Yeah.
So they got that right. Like, size-wise, it was pretty spot on.
Just very clean.
Super clean, yes.
Yeah.
And then so we see, like, this sweet moment between Molly and Mikey, I guess having a moment of, like, oh, wow, you're here.
Yeah.
And him, I guess, reciprocating
in Bruce Willis' voice.
Yeah.
Saying something like, oh, mummy's not so bad.
You're the one that's been eating all the spicy food.
That's right, yeah.
Yes.
So we cut to now a room full of babies. all crying and unhappy, speaking in their own Bruce Willis-style voices, but yes, with their own accents. It's the baby nursery in the hospital.
Which was common practice to separate moms and babies. Like, yeah, that part's not unusual. And we see Molly have this moment where she's looking through the glass at Mikey in his cot.
Yeah.
And then she's looking down the corridor at all the dads meeting their babies.
Yeah.
I guess she gets really sad and she says, I'm going to find you a daddy.
Yeah, she's kind of realizing that the deadbeat dad who threw her into labor by canoodling with somebody in the change room isn't really going to be around for her.
No. And then we cut home, which was really disorienting because we go from newborn baby to what I thought was a three-month-old baby, but is actually a four-month-old baby.
But in movie, it's a couple days later.
Yes. It's not immediately clear.
Yeah.
Like, and the baby that they have in this scene is, like, he's sitting in a little baby chair and he's smiling and he's really engaged. And he's got good sort of hand coordination.
Yeah.
Is not a new baby at all. And the only way we know that it's meant to be a three-day-old baby is she goes into the bathroom and realizes that her boobs are huge, but she has no idea why.
Yeah.
And she quickly goes and looks it up and it says, like, day 3 to 4, your breasts will get swollen because your milk's coming in.
Yeah.
And I guess this is the only mention we really get of breast milk. We certainly don't see any breastfeeding.
We don't see any indication of expressing breast milk or breastfeeding or any of that happening. The closest thing we get is in the following scene where James is telling Mikey about terrible American coffee. And he tells him that he forgot his milk and sugar in his coffee and grabs the milk that's on the table.
In a baby bottle.
In his baby bottle, yeah. Puts it in coffee and drinks it. And then Castelli from the other room is like, you know that's breast milk, don't you? And then he spits it out.
Yeah.
But that's the only use of the word breast milk.
Yes, we certainly don't see it, and it's never spoken of again.
Yeah.
It's meant to be early postpartum days. So yeah, we get into all, I guess, the typical postpartum tropes of baby doesn't sleep, baby likes to eat.
But we do get an interesting perspective in this that we get narrated from the baby's perspective, where baby Mikey's talking about how, oh, when I cry, mommy comes, and oh, when I cry, mommy brings milk. And then, like, a little bit of baby manipulating mommy narrative to keep her awake and keep her coming.
Yes.
And crying on purpose.
Yes, so she becomes really fatigued. And the timeline is still really disorienting because, like, then not so long later we cut to, I think, an even bigger baby at this point.
Yeah.
But I think she's still meant to be early postpartum because she's, like, looked up a book again about why she's so sad.
She has a moment of crying at Mikey.
Yes, and is it postpartum depression?
Yeah.
Around the same time Mikey's being given foods other than milk and is sitting up in a high chair. The timeline on, I guess, Mikey's development is very strange, and the baby actor definitely is much older than I think what they want you to think. In fact, I think we're at a point where he's meant to be about 6 months old, but the baby actor that's credited is one. So they're not accurate portrayals.
It frustrated me throughout this movie. Baby gets put in a baby seat, and then the baby seat is just like on metal runners or something, and gets put on the highest surfaces you can imagine. In the house, in and around the house.
Yes, there's definitely, I think watching a movie that's 35 years old, you do see how different some of the practices are compared to modern parenting. The setup of the cot, like full of stuff, yeah, that he's set up in a baby seat all the time, like up on a table or up on a bench.
Yeah, it might have been realistic for the time, but it also, like, movie practicality makes sense to have baby at eye level so that you can actually film them easily. But
yes,
still.
And because he's meant to be, like, observing the room. The rest of the movie is about her finding a dad for Mikey.
It's rom-com tropes between her and James. Well, really messed up rom-com tropes between her and James.
Yes.
And her trying to find a dad, James and Mikey bonding over various things and becoming more and more friendly.
It's sort of, I think, a little bit sad in a way because it very much says you can't do this alone, or even goes as far as saying, like, how dare you do this alone? You can't.
I think the underlying message seems to be babies need dads.
Yes.
Well, baby boys, even.
Yes,
need dads.
Yes, there's a lot of that.
You women can't be dads.
I mean, despite the fact that she is a successful career woman, she seems to go back to work quite quickly.
Yeah, I thought that was crazy.
Which I know is really common in America still. We know that she's a capable woman, but the rest of the movie is just about her getting Mikey a dad.
There's probably an interesting thing about, like, parenting and motherhood in there. She goes on dates with a number of people, I think it's four or five, but she keeps having visions of the future of what it's going to be like with this person when she notices a personality quirk of theirs. Like, one of them is rude to the wait staff, and she's thinking about how that dad's going to be like, why aren't you organizing your socks the way I want you to?
Yeah.
To fix this.
Yes.
And
she becomes completely Mikey-centric.
Everything else kind of went away, and the important thing was that Mikey got what he needed, and in her mind and the movie's mind, Mikey got a dad.
Yes. And, I mean, to cut a long story short, that's where it goes.
Yeah.
Like, there's a few other strange sort of tangential storylines about James's dad, and then a scene with Mikey going missing in New York City.
To begin with, the very first chance James gets where Molly falls asleep, He steals the dang baby.
Yes, that's true.
He takes the baby.
Yes.
No, doesn't say a word, doesn't even know. He just takes the baby to the airport.
No, but
yeah.
Despite all that,
yeah.
They do end up together.
Yep.
And we finish off the movie with a Sperm Race 2.0.
Yes, that's right.
We're back on the inside.
Yep, we're back on the inside.
And the final scene is of Mikey meeting his baby sister that Molly and James have had together.
Voiced by Joan Rivers. So now that you've rewatched it since your childhood and you thought that all those things we discussed earlier in the podcast, what do you think about this now that you've revisited it?
I'm on the fence because parts of it are very accurate to the time, even though I think some of the practices are not great. Like, I'm thinking particularly about the birth that, you know, she gets to the hospital and she's just in a bed the whole time.
Yeah.
Despite being like a well woman with a well baby with no complications. The moment of going into labor on the street and getting to the hospital is super dramatic.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily dramatic.
Yeah, absolutely.
They make a big leap between first contraction and, oh, labor.
Everything's on, we got to rush.
That's just not how it happens.
The entire movie speaks to these characters not really understanding labor or birth very well.
Yes.
It's throughout the movie, it's that Molly doesn't know what's happening, basically. She's confused and she's blindsided by every new development that is obvious that it's going to happen.
It feels very much like pregnancy and labor and birth are happening to her.
Yes.
And not with her. Like, she's not an active participant. It's an unplanned pregnancy, but then, you know, she's excited and wants to keep the baby, but that she does no preparation.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she's in labor and doesn't really understand what's going on. There's no big, like, dramatic complications in the actual birth. Like, the getting to hospital is traumatic, but the actual birth is not.
Well, that the drama of the getting to hospital was inflicted upon her by a crazy cab driver.
Yes. The postpartum is very much presented as happening to her.
Yes.
And by this point, she seems to be trying to learn for the sake of her baby, who we know she loves.
Yeah.
Because that's made clear, but it's also made clear that either the societal expectations at the time or something saying, well, you can't do this alone. The end game of the movie is
completing her family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I guess it's like the pursuit of that heteronormative
nuclear family.
I don't know if that's just because it's 1989 or if that comes back to like what people want to see in a movie.
Yeah.
And like we said at the very beginning, this was a popular movie. A lot of people saw it.
Yeah. How old was Molly in this movie?
They said she was 33.
Yeah.
So she was told, oh, you're 33 and your clock's, your biological clock is ticking.
A 33-year-old woman not having experienced friends, family, pregnancies, stories seems strange to me. Like, being so naive about it.
But again, maybe that's a reflection of the time too of...
Keep it all a secret?
Yes.
Is that a
secret
reason why
women's business?
Yeah. Does that mean that does that play into why this movie was so popular? That it expressed the secret woman's business out loud a bit?
Maybe.
In a medicalized way.
Maybe. They did get some things right.
Yeah. Overall compared to some Hollywood movies you see these days. Yeah. They got a lot right.
Where I draw issue is mostly around how poorly it's dated.
Yeah.
Or how medicalized it is. Nothing overtly wrong.
Attitudes are wrong, maybe.
Did pile on, like, the pregnancy and labor and birth and postpartum trope. You could almost start, like, a bingo card of things.
Yeah, you'd fill it with this movie.
You'd fill it really quickly because, you know, you had morning sickness and cravings and that she's getting fat. I hate that word.
Yeah.
That she has crazy dreams, you know, water's breaking in labor and not being able to cope. Yeah. There was a lot. So we're going to finish off each episode with three questions. The first is...
Is it a realistic depiction of birth?
For this question, I think I'm on the fence.
Yeah. So some interesting backwards and forwards on the different parts of it as to whether it was realistic or not.
It's realistic, but it's very dramatic.
Yeah. So I think some of the ways that it is realistic. So at the end, there's a realistically sized baby.
For the birth.
For the birth, yeah.
Not in the postpartum.
No, not in the postpartum. Yes, definitely not in the postpartum. But like straight away, like they get that more or less right in terms of size. A very clean baby like we talked about, which is not realistic. There was a realistic cord, which is pretty good. The way that labor started.
Yes.
Maybe lacks realism in that she goes, oh, I'm in labor.
Yes.
Panic starts. Oh, my waters are broken. Panic elevates.
Yes.
That's a bit weird.
But yeah, there are elements of it that were realistic.
Yeah.
And probably more so when you think about it in the context of 1989.
Yes.
So our second question is...
Was it a positive depiction of birth?
I'm also on the fence about this.
Yeah.
I think all in all, not really.
Yeah. Well, so there's a lot of the stuff you already mentioned about the panic and the drama and the escalated tensions. That all comes into it being kind of not positive.
Yes. And that for a lot of it, it just felt like pregnancy and labor and birth and even the postpartum was happening to her and not with her. Yes. I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, it's a movie. They're trying to make it entertaining.
Yes, but there are other ways to make it entertaining just to make your protagonist clueless about what's happening. It would be really easy to go, oh, I know what's happening. I'm about to go, this part of labor is occurring. And, oh, no, it's different than I expected.
Yes.
Like, there's still plenty of humor and stuff in that.
But it's also not completely negative either. Like, she didn't have massive complications or no one almost died.
Yeah, the character was scared of the pain, but that was kind of treated well enough. She got pain relief and then she was comfortable as much as she could be.
I think that's why I'm on the fence because, it's not awful.
Yeah.
But it's sort of...
Yeah, so it
wasn't great either.
Somewhere in the middle. It's neutral. It's a neutral one.
And our third question.
Was it entertaining?
And it's an entertaining movie. I loved it as a kid.
Yeah.
I watched it way too many times. And it's interesting watching it again as an adult. It is entertaining, say, to a whole family.
Yeah.
Because there's elements in it that appeal to everyone. You know, it's got the funny sort of adult innuendo humor that goes on and there's a talking baby.
Yeah.
And there is the drama, you know, there is a big car.
Two car chases in the whole movie,
They're not even car chases, like big car.
They're not chases. They're just a dude behind the wheel being reckless.
Yes. Big rush off to hospital and, So it brings the entertainment factor. And it wasn't a chore to rewatch it.
No. The whole movie is entertaining. The birth scene is also entertaining. As an adult, I watched it when I was young as well. But I don't particularly remember it. I remember that I knew certain things about it. But, I enjoyed watching it enough that I didn't think that I wasted time, even if we weren't doing a podcast about it.
Yeah.
It would have been fine to spend the 90 minutes watching this kind of popcorn-y but fine movie.
Yes. So, yes.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
Yeah.
Ticks that box.
That's it for today.
If you would like to contact us or find our socials, please check the show notes for links.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Birth on Film.